ஸ்ரீகுருவே நமஹ. This is a continuing conversation between Lord Chaitanya, Brahmananda Bharati, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and all the devotees that are now coming from different places, meeting with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after his return, after a couple of years while he was touring South India. Brahmananda Bharati, as we read earlier, was a godbrother of Keshava Bharati, Lord Chaitanya's sannyas guru. So Lord Chaitanya is somewhat humble before him, but they had some exchanges which are part of the mechanics of what's happening in this progression of their relationship. Now Brahmananda Bharati is expressing that he is transforming. He, in text 175, he stated, "I have been meditating on the impersonal Brahman since my birth, but since I have seen you, I have fully experienced Krishna." So he's going through a change, a transformation from an impersonalist conception to a personalist conception. And one has to wonder why that's happening to him. What took place that's awakened him to something different than what he believed before, or what he's been meditating on and thinking of since his birth? So who can help us remember what happened when Brahmananda Bharati first came before Lord Chaitanya, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got word that Brahmananda Bharati had come? And he, because he was junior, he said, "No, rather than him coming to me, I will go to him." And he went to him. Who can remember what happened? Jai Mataji? Let's get the microphone so people online can also hear your wonderful answer.
Lord Chaitanya was in front of Brahmananda Bharati, even though he was there, Lord Chaitanya said that, "Where is Brahmananda Bharati?" Because Brahmananda Bharati was wearing deer skin in order to express his renunciation, and Lord Chaitanya was displeased with that, so he expressed his displeasure by saying, "Where is he? Because he didn't recognize him."
Excellent. Very good. And then what did Brahmananda Bharati do? Somebody else? Do you remember Brahmananda Bharati's reaction? Lord Chaitanya came before him and says, "Where is Brahmananda Bharati? I don't see him." Because he was wearing deer skin as a sign of his renunciation and his disinterest in materialism. And then what was Brahmananda Bharati's immediately heartfelt reaction? I mean, it's the most important part of the pastime. Somebody must remember. Pundarik Prabhu. Exactly. He was submissive. He surrendered immediately to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. It was a little joking, but one of the mechanics of realization is that one has to be submissive. If we have an attitude about anything, and someone has a different attitude toward that thing, then naturally we're not submissive to their concept. We rebel against it. We think, "No, that's not right," like this. And therefore we're not submissive or open to the possibility of a transformation because we're fixed in our own belief or our own concept. Now, this man had been worshipping the impersonal Brahman since his birth. He had taken sannyas. He was walking around the world in a deerskin, respected by all as a renunciate. This was his identification of himself. And all of a sudden, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu challenged that. "I don't see Brahmananda Bharati. He would never wear a deerskin." Imagine the gears turning in his head, thinking, oh my God, his whole life is all of a sudden like, and but immediately he surrenders. Oh, Mahaprabhu is not appreciating my sannyas robes here, my deerskin. So he submitted himself. This is the fulcrum point that I wanted to point out, and then follow that trail. Because from whenever we have to transform, there has to be awakening. Awakening is the first step, an awareness that something isn't the way it want it to be or should be, and there's something else that has to be acquired. So the first thing is to have acknowledgement of that. This is actually the whole crux of our situation in this material world. We're in a place that is temporary, illusory, full of suffering, but most people won't want to hear that or agree with it. They rebel. You've got to be kidding me. I can't enjoy here. Oh, God, what am I going to do? Most people won't even get to there. So let me explain a little bit from the third canto about how bound conditioned souls are. This is from chapter 10, texts 14 through 16. There are nine different kinds of creations besides the one which naturally occurs due to the interaction of the modes. Of the nine, the first one is the creation of the Mahatattva, or the sum total of material ingredients. So when Mahavishnu breathes out, there's the Mahatattva. Even before the universes are manifested, before Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Shirodakshaya Vishnu and all the planets are there, there's just material energy. In the second creation, the false ego is generated, in which the material ingredients, material knowledge, and material activities arise. The sense perceptions are created in the third creation, and from these the elements are generated. The fourth creation is the creation of knowledge and the working capacity. The main point that we're discussing, or that I want to focus on, is the sense perceptions are created in the third creation, and from these the elements are generated. It's called tanmatra. Tanmatra is the subtle senses. We have gross senses, and we experience interaction with material ingredients with these gross senses. But we should become aware that there's something pushing those. What controls the senses are the tanmatra deities, the subtle senses. And these subtle senses, how are they interacting with the living entity? From Bhagavad Gita 15:7-9. Mamaivam sa jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manakstastan indriyani prakati stani karshati. The living entities in the conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. The living entity in the material world carries his different conceptions of life from one body to another, as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another. The living entity thus, taking another gross body, obtains a certain type of ear, eye, tongue, nose, and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects. So if we could take like a cross section, have you ever seen these graphs? Like if you see a picture, a graphic of like the earth in a particular place, and it's cut down the side, and you can see that there's a little grass up top, then there's a little brown dirt, then there's some rocks, and then as you go further down, you can see the whole makeup of that plot of earth going way down underneath. So in the same way, if we take a living entity and we put a graph on it, then we have this top part, which is kind of like the mind, that's always like the top of the ocean. It's a little bit of like agitating, and there's some little waves and stuff like that. And the mind's always changing and always going here and there. But as we go to different levels, further and further down into the subtle body, to the tanmatra, to pride, false ego, sex impulse, all these things, the identification of our self as a material entity, all these things are underlying way down at the bottom of our big graph. So when we, and we really don't even have access. We can't consciously contact that part of ourselves. It's too covered. So we require what? Help. and what happens is that due to our conditioning, the further down the graph you get, the more rebellious you get to change. Because it's a tighter bond. It's a tighter grip. It's a tighter covering, like if you had a ball of string. And, you know, you wrap it and wrap it and wrap it and wrap it. The outer part is kind of fluffy and soft. But as you start taking and unraveling it, like down at the bottom, it's a real tight ball. And it's all hard to get to. Just like the further down you get in the earth, the harder it gets and the more rock-like it gets. So when we have decisions to make, like something's going to transform, somebody says, okay, let's go to Harinam today. And somebody else says, well, actually, I have to go cook prasadam for the Rajbhoga offering. So it's like a different mindset. It's something that's easy. It's a decision made on the rather kind of like the surface. It's just a change of mind. I'm going to go here, or I'm going to go there. But as we get further down into the realms of our consciousness, we start to come across things. Now, for example, here's Brahmananda Bharati. And Lord Chaitanya is saying to him, what are you doing wearing that clothing? So he's actually saying, you don't look right. You should change your dress. Well, so what happened to those boys in 26 Second Avenue when Srila Prabhupada's walking around in a dhoti on a kurta, and they're seeing him, but they're wearing long hair and shirt and pant and beards and everything. You can see the pictures. They didn't just go out and shave up and put on a dhoti and a kurta. It took time for him to enlighten them about a different way of life. And as they became submissive to that, they agreed to transform. And it's just clothes. My goodness, I wear a green one or a blue one. But we identify so much with what we're looking like and who we identify with ourselves that rebellion is there. So we have Brahmananda Bharati in his relationship with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I've told you a few weeks ago that I'm embarking on a study of the Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2017 for our online course at sadhusangaonline.com. And in order to prepare for that, obviously I have to start now to put together the course materials. So I've started to study the first, second, and third chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Oh my God. When you read a book, doesn't matter what book it is, when you actually commit to read a book, you're submitting yourself to that author's presentation. You're agreeing to be taken on the ride that they take you on. Alice in Wonderland, where do you go? You go to Wonderland with Alice. If you read The Wizard of Oz, then you go to Oz with Dorothy. If you read the Ramayana, then you go to Ayodhya, and you go to Sri Lanka, and into Dandakaranya Forest, and all these different places where Lord Ram's world. Similarly, if you read the Mahabharata, you go to Hastinapur, and 5,000 years ago, and the Yadu dynasty, the Kuru dynasty, the Pandavas. Similarly, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you enter the world of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and I got sucked in. So I want to share with you a little bit what happened when I'm preparing for class, which is Madhya 10, halfway through the book. and chapter 1. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami starts with 14 introductory verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the way that he's organized his book. And then he takes each one of those and expands upon it as he goes through his book. So we have a concept here where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually interacting with a person who has an impersonal conception, but yet he's transforming him by different means. And what are those means is what's going to be discussed. How he does it. What is his process? What is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually offering us? So I want to read some of those verses. Adi 1, text 84. Oh, did you have a question?
One more left.
Okay.
After Brahmananda Bharat, Mahaprabhu's expectation, then Mahaprabhu paid obeisances, but then Mahaprabhu tested him, whether internally he actually convinced or not. So Mahaprabhu says, oh, you are Brahman, and Jagannath is Brahman, and Mahaprabhu went like this, and then Brahmananda Bharati came back. He says, no, no, there is two Brahman in Jagannath Puri. One is black color, blackish,
Prabhupada, and stationary.
And you are white or golden. Yeah. The two Brahman. And I'm just a living entity. But Mahaprabhu would not accept. And Mahaprabhu says, no, you and me, we are living entity, and Jagannath is Brahman. Then Sarvam Bhattacharya came there.
Yes.
Then Brahmananda Bharati submits to Sarvam Bhattacharya to be a mediator.
And that's where we are. I didn't want to get too deep into that because I wanted to spend the time. That was supposed to be covered by the previous speakers in other weeks because we already did that. What to do? So, text 84. Adi 1, 84. This is the second verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now what he's done is he spoke it in the first part of the chapter, and now later on he's expanding upon it. Vande Guru, Vande Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Nityananda Sahodito, Gaudadai Pushpavanto, Chitto Sando, Tamodito. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gauda to dissipate the darkness of ignorance, and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Up to 88. As the sun and moon drive away the darkness by their appearance and reveal the nature of everything, these two brothers dissipate the darkness of the living being's ignorance and enlighten them with knowledge of the absolute truth. The darkness of ignorance is called Kaitava, the way of cheating, which begins with religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. And then he quotes verse 2 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, that this Srimad Bhagavatam, compiled by Mahamuni Vyasadeva from the original four verses, describes the most elevated and kind-hearted devotees and completely rejects the cheating ways of materially motivated religiosity. Kaitava Dharma, the whole purport, here you can see there's a long one, describes the different forms of religiosity which are cheating religions. Karmakanda means to act in ceremonial rites and rituals and yajnas so that you get a better material position. Jnanakanda means that you follow the path of the Vedas, acquire knowledge so that you can merge into the absolute. Mystic yoga means that one follows a process of austerities and tapasyas to attain material siddhis. But this wonderful purport, just one paragraph from it, describes why all of them are cheating processes. I'm in 91 purport. Adi 1, 91. It's there. Okay, so we'll just go down the purport until any process of religiosity. It's like three quarters of the way through this purport. Any process of religiosity based on sense gratification, gross or subtle, again, we're back to this same concept. Remember, we were discussing the tanmatra senses, gross or subtle, which means like an empiric philosopher, a jnani. A jnani knows, or a mystic yogi knows, that these material senses are not real sources of pleasure. But yet, by the impulse of the soul, way down underneath our graph at the bottom, and what happens is the soul has impulses. It's a live entity. But those impulses, as they come up through the graph, on our graph that I described earlier, the impulses become influenced and diverted by one's modes, and therefore express themselves in a perverted way. Love for my children, love for my body, love for my country, love for mankind, whatever it might be. It's love, but it's been filtered through all that graph as it comes up and out of the water. What's that verse by George Harrison? What did he say? I don't know how you've been perverted. You've been diverted to. While my guitar gently weeps. Any religiosity based on sense gratification, gross or subtle, must be considered a pretentious religion because it is unable to give perpetual protection to its followers. The word projita is significant. Pra means complete, and ujita indicates rejection. Religiosity in the shape of fruitive work is directly a method of gross sense gratification, whereas the process of culturing spiritual knowledge with a view to become one with the absolute is a method of subtle sense gratification. All such pretentious religiosity based on gross or subtle sense gratification is completely rejected in the process of Bhagavad Dharma, or transcendental religion that is an eternal function of the living being. And he goes on to describe that because the living entity has natural tendencies, constitutional impulses, any religion which covers that and makes it so that when the impulse comes up through the modes of material nature, it manifests in anything other than devotional service to Krishna, is a cheating process because it doesn't give the living entity its nourishment at its core, a perpetual, eternal satisfaction. It's something temporary. So therefore, it cheats the practitioner. Text 92, and this beautifully describes how the sun and moon rise to dissipate this ignorance. The foremost process of cheating is to desire to achieve liberation by merging into the Supreme, for this causes the permanent disappearance of loving service to Krishna. Purport. The desire to merge in the impersonal Brahman is the subtlest type of atheism. So what happens in the material world to the living entity who's been conditioned is he wants to find relief and freedom from the suffering. And as he becomes more and more aware of the subtle world and the spiritual pursuit, then naturally they want to give up the material. And in the process of giving up the material, there's a path which leads to nothing. It actually leads there. It'll take you right there to nothing in the world of emptiness and voidness and one, because it's completely free. And the thing is, Brahmiti Paramatmiti Bhagavan Iti Subjute, it's an aspect of truth. It exists. It's actually a true realm. It's not false like this material world. So there's an immediate satisfaction and attachment and appreciation and freedom from relief of the temporary when one merges and becomes absorbed in the oneness of everything. It's totally attractive. And Brahmananda Bharati cultivated that, not only in this lifetime. We have a nice lecture at the end, lecture clip by Srila Prabhupada, where he's describing Brahmananda Bharati quoted Bibi Mangal Thakur, who also went from an impersonal conception to being like a thief brought in by that cunning boy who's playing with the gopis. So he describes how Bibi Mangal Thakur was an impersonalist and then was transformed due to cultivation in a past life. We live and we look at each other like this is really what's happening. Oh my God, it's such a small little dink on the big line. It's a point in time. And we identify with it. But in actuality, going back to our Tan Matra senses, we have been cultivating something for a very, very long time. Bhavanam Janmanamante, Ganavamam Patajinte, Vasudeva Sarvamiti, Samahatma Sadurlabha. How does that happen? Well, we describe it by that nice one in Srila Prabhupada. So here it's describing that it's the subtlest type of atheism is this merging. Text 93. The prefix pra in the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam indicates the desire for liberation is completely rejected. All kinds of activities, both auspicious and inauspicious, that are detrimental to the discharge of transcendental loving service to Lord Krishna are actions in the darkness of ignorance. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The poetical comparison of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to the sun and moon is very significant. The living entities are spiritual sparks, and their constitutional position is in the devotional service to the Supreme Lord in full Krishna consciousness. So-called pious activities or other ritualistic performances, pious or impious, as well as the desire to escape material existence, are all considered to be coverings of the sparks. The living entities must get freed from these superfluous coverings to fully engage in Krishna consciousness. The purpose of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is to dispel the darkness of the soul. Before their appearance, all these superfluous activities of living entities were covering Krishna consciousness. But after the appearance of these two brothers, people's hearts are becoming cleansed, and they are again becoming situated in their real position of Krishna consciousness. Text 95. By the grace of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, this darkness of ignorance is removed, and the truth is brought to light. The absolute truth is Sri Krishna, and loving devotion to Krishna, exhibited in pure love, is achieved through congregational chanting of the holy name, which is the essence of all bliss. The sun and moon dissipate the darkness of the external world and thus reveal external material objects, like pots and plates. These two brothers, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, dissipate the darkness at the inner core of the heart, and thus they help one meet two kinds of Bhagavats, personal persons or things in relationship to the personality of Godhead. Here starts another explanation of the mechanics. How does this process work that you get down to the heart, instead of up here just living on the surface world? How do you get down? How does the living entity in this day and age get down to that area, which is really going to tweak and change their sojourn? I was thinking a nice graphic. You know these sound engineers? They have like these huge consoles in front of them with all kinds of dials, and then there's this volume and some of those dials, if you move them and change them, are so fine-tuning you can hardly even notice the difference unless you have real super stereo studio speakers or super-duper digital headphones that can pick up such a fine change. But then there are other dials that actually really, like treble or bass, you know, these things actually really change the sound or one all the speed of the speaker, it really changes the message. So how do we get down to that, those places that really change our lives, change our sojourn, awaken this love that lies within us? And these two, persons of the Bhagavat and the Srimad Bhagavatam, are the two. Text 100 explains it. It's amazing how in one verse such a profound change or mechanism is described. Through the actions of these two Bhagavats, the Lord instills the mellows of transcendental loving service into the heart of a living being. And thus the Lord, in the heart of his devotee, comes under the control of the devotee's love. So what we've done is we've described how from a position of submissiveness, one comes to a position through maturity and spiritual growth to actually control the love, to control the love, the Lord, through love. Sing it with me. Eti dikchali randiramanda kunde swadosham nirmajantam akyapayantam tariyesi tanesu bhaktarjitatvam kuna prematastam satavikrivande. Those super excellent pastimes of Lord Krishna's babyhood drown the inhabitants of Gokul in pools of ecstasy. To the devotees who are attracted only to his majestic aspect of Narayan and Vaikuntha, the Lord herein reveals, I am conquered and overwhelmed by pure loving devotion. To the Supreme Lord Damodar, my obeisances hundreds and hundreds of times. So this is the light that Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda are bestowing upon the world. And it behooves everyone who wants to take advantage of that to worship them, to pay attention, to absorb ourselves more in their message, in their process, in their association, than all the superfluous things that really won't bring us the satisfaction and enlightenment that they're offering. And this is what's actually happening to Brahmananda Bharati. He is getting a personal realization about who the personality of Godhead is and feeling that after having worshipped this whole other method for his whole life. Now in this lecture clip, Srila Prabhupada explains a little more about Bhivimangal Thakur and how he performed bhakti in his previous life to the point of bhava bhakti. Bhava bhakti is when you feel emotions, crying, tears in the eyes, choking of the voice, shivering. He was on that level and then didn't reach perfection and left his body. In his next life, according to the Bhagavad Gita, he took his birth in a wealthy Brahmin family, but became very degraded. He was very wealthy. He became attached to a prostitute. He was performing the Shraddha ceremony for his father, and he was thinking so much of the prostitute that he was trying to hurry the priest up. So imagine how degraded he was. But then what happened was that when he went to that prostitute, Prabhupada explains it. She said, what are you doing? If you had this much faith for Krishna, you'd be a wonderful devotee. And immediately at that moment, it sparked his previous Sukriti. It awakened it just like a seed put in the ground. It gets like nourishment and starts to awaken. So this process of coming in contact and awakening something that's already there, for me, that's very enthusing. It's like understanding I'm in part of a process here. No matter where I am now, I might be at 10, I might be at 20, 30, 40, 50%. But whatever I'm doing is a progression of what I've done in the past, and it's part of where I'm propelling myself to the future. So I find that pretty enlightening.
Just like so many boys and girls come to our association. Just like somebody forcing you just human being. That is Krishna's grace. That means in the past life, they had been Krishna conscious. Somehow or other, it was not fully. Now again, the chance is fully. That is written in Bhagavad Gita. That Jata Tinsa Tato Bhya, Santi Jyot, the percentage after which he is finished in his last life, that is not lost, that is there. 50%, not 40%, that's why I executed in the last month. Now, next, this verse, unlimited, or by force, when Krishna is caught, he is created. That's a beyond action. I think, I'm sure it's all popular, it's a beyond action.
Bhava-bhakti.
Jai Srila Prabhupada. Any discussion? Pran Govinda Prabhu.
Then came to 51 chapter Muchukunda, very well. There's a famous verse that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also spoke. Maran Bhimita Raja says, Sarvan Kaman Bhavan. Maam Prasanna Janata Sushita. Na Sochita, or Hati Sochita. This is just in related to their dialogue between Muchukunda and Lord Krishna. Baba, Baba, Varga, Dharma, Varga, those verses are very famous. That how did they come here, this world, how the whole conditioned life. So in that verse, Srila Krishna said, I will give a little key point. He says, origin is the moment a living entity desire not to serve. Some point, we are not arguing on that. Some point, all the conditioned soul desired not to serve was the birthplace of false ego. And Prabhupada says false ego is a product of material nature, but it's not born in the material world, nor in the spiritual world. It's in the marginal world. Just before coming, not in the spiritual world, not in the material world, just in the body. And at that point, the apathy to devotional service caused one after another, lording over the material nature. And through that, try to accumulate it for this more matter, that matters. In Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, the last verse, last paragraph Prabhupada put, very significant, do fall down in the of last paragraph in Bhagavad Gita. It's a similar point in him. So then it says, when he fails to lording over and control, then he comes to atheistic life. And then he does not feel comfortable in that, then he wants to march. It's like a sequence, one of the coordinates of never ends of the human.
So Lord Chaitanya is giving some medicine for that.
Direct. What should we do? So it goes back, Vishnu Chaitanya Prabhu says, in that part he says, Mam Prasanna Janakaschit Narhati Sochitam. At least one time, if that soul in that vulnerable position utter the name of the Lord and take Shri Bhakti, then everything comes back. All life is gone outside.
But it takes time. People think, again, we're not up here at the surface. Down below, that conditioning is very tight. It's become our natural way to react. And that needs to be changed, so it takes repetition. As much energy as was put into it, the opposite will have to be put in, the opposite effort in order to transform it.
Some of the lecture, Prabhupada, like one lecture I have, Prabhupada says, in Gujarat, the devotees are chanting and they are feeling in ecstasy, and then the reporter asks some people, religious people, they say, no, these Hare Krishna's are not in ecstasy, Bhava Bhakti. But when Prabhupada heard it, he said, yes, they are in Bhava Bhakti. They do not know what is the Bhava Bhakti. Mm-hmm. So I think about this, why Prabhupada said, because Prabhupada made a point at that time in that lecture, he said, constitutionally we are positioned as a loving servant of the Lord. So Bhava is natural, but it's not revealed or manifested. But all these other ideas, merging and other, these are not constitutional. Right. But there will be always problems. Thank you. Nice talk.
No, thank you. Nice topic. Swaha.
Hello. Thank you for the wonderful class, but my question is just on CC, which I don't get an opportunity to ask for. When Lord Chaitanya met Prakashananda, Saraswati, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and before that. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, you fall down, you know, you're so beautiful, you're young, you know, don't be so sentimental, you have to study Vedanta. Similarly, Prakashananda, you know, we are sentimental, chanting and dancing, you have to study with us. But did they not know that Lord Chaitanya was known as Nimal Pandit? He had defeated Kesha Kashmir. I mean, he must have had a reputation that he had studied. So,
They're a process. They're not simply saying, oh, you need to study more. The Sankaracharya Sampradaya, like our process, the process Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is presenting is chanting, dancing, taking prasadam. It's process. It's a sadhana. Their sadhana is to study Vedanta. So it's not that they were just telling him, oh, you should study more. It's you should absorb your life. You should spend every day, most of it, studying Vedanta. This is the path. You're doing this chanting, you're doing this thing you're doing. It's not going to lead to the proper way. You're going to become influenced. You are sentimental. That's what they were telling. You're only chanting and dancing. You need to study. You need to fix your mind. You need to become more fixed in that knowledge. Then you can conquer the senses. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving a completely different method, as we read earlier that verse from the Chaitanya Chandamrita and the purport, where the senses of the devotee are like the snake's teeth that have been, the poison has been removed. That we're using our senses in service of Krishna. So it's a different path.
Who is the author of Chaitanya Chandamrita?
Prabhupananda Saraswati.
And, so, you know, Lord Chaitanya, out of humility, he was saying that my guru said that more for the guru was suffering. He was saying that out of humility.
Well, that's questionable. It's just like Damodar. We've had the discussion previously that he was not playing a part of a frightened child. The Lila Shakti, Yogamaya, covered the entire scene, so he was actually afraid. And his eyes were fearful and his breathing quick. And his mother just sort of bound his belly with ropes and shivered in fright. His pearl necklace shook. It's true. He was frightened. So in the same way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in order to present his, before his spiritual master, he truly felt that way. And therefore, he submitted himself, yes, I'll do this. I'll chant this mantra. And because of your order, back to the beginning of our discussion.
Yeah. Verse 144, the last line of the verse, where it says that all the devotees came to meet Lord Chaitanya from different places and return to Puri. It's the proper life that it's like different rivers coming to the ocean. So I was a little, I didn't understand that metaphor.
That's not the part of the metaphor that he's describing. He's saying that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the leader. Everybody's following him. He's so influential. He's so well loved by everyone. Just like all the gopis coming to meet Krishna, could be said that it's like rivers coming to the ocean, because that's their natural tendency. Their natural flow, Mother Queen Kunti, she prays, may my devotion flow like the Ganges forever toward the sea. So that metaphor is meant like that, that all these devotees love and they've given up everything and flowed to Jagannath Puri where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, just like the rivers flow from all over the world into the ocean. Not that they merge. That's not the part of the metaphor that is being described.
Thank you, Dad.
We'll go to somebody else if they have one. Yes.
You know, he's explaining that he's going to say that he says he cannot have any quality that doesn't exist in the pure form. So where does this enviousness come from?
Lording over. When he says lording over the material nature, his intention to acquire, possess the matter, subtle and gross.
To control it.
Yeah. Well, two things Prabhupada says. You have Bhagavad Gita there?
Yes.
The last verse on chapter 15 and purport paragraph, Prabhupada says the weakness of the heart. Weakness of the heart. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, because when he fails and he tries, he keeps on failing, that an enviousness is born. He wants to act like a god. No more looking for God. He wants to be the God, so he can control.
You want to read it?
Sure.
While one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness, there are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of the heart is that one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature and becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of heart. In this chapter, the first verse, first five verses, describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses, and the rest of the chapter, from sixth verse through the end, discusses Purusottama Yoga. If I remember correctly, it's the weapon of detachment. Speak to Deepable.
This is an interesting topic and something that's related, I thought it possible.
Thank you.
The Gita verse is saying, one of the weakness of the heart wants the Lord to open it, but gives up devotional loving service. So it seems like when we talk about where enviousness comes from, it seems like it almost has to be as an option. Because since love being exchanged for something freely given, one has to have an alternative in order to have freedom to give to love.
Expand on that a little bit. Sounds good.
Well, it's like if you could only love Krishna, then it's in one sense, it's not freely given because you have no option to hold it back. You have to have an option not to give it in order to make it a voluntary expression.
Right.
So without the opportunity to
freedom of
have
will,
some alternative reality explored, you can't actually be in a.
So how does envy arise?
It's you don't want that relationship. You want something else. It's
you choose something else, or focus on something else.
Huge
or
discussion.
Yeah, of course. But inherent within that manifestation is a process, it's inherent, it's natural within it, like water is wet. It will ultimately, when the living energy drops into it, it will ultimately transform him and bring him back to that loving, or awaken that love for the Lord. Keshav Prabhu? Oh, Pandavi, sorry.
That's then it's going to purify the house of worship coming from in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no?
It's not.
So isn't it that, before Lord Chaitanya appeared, he wanted to face God around his love for him. One sense, he's actually anchored to something he doesn't have like that.
Nice.
If that's a possible
option and place where
it is.
Just another angle of vision. Everything's a preferred reflection from the spiritual. So the origin is in the spiritual. Chandravali and Radharani, they have their different camps. And there's no malice because that doesn't exist in the spiritual world. But everything that's here, you just add the modes of nature, and if you pull a mouse, that there's everything that's here exists there in its pure form. So that's everything has its origin there, but when it hits the material nature, then it, you know,
yes, takes on those. It's like the water coming out of the skin.
You know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find Prabhupada given an example. Radharani was talking to Krishna, and she, her heart is so transparent that actually reflected on Krishna's body that there is another girl. And she got so angry. Prabhupada put this and said, "Who is this girl?" And Lalita Sakhi came and said, "Excuse me, Radha, I see you with your
heart." Oh.
Is that also a good idea? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.